Okay. It's a pleasure for me this afternoon to introduce Greg Jarvis. I met Greg, a number of years ago when he was primarily a cattle producer and a grain farmer. And since that time, they ventured off into raspberries and some vegetable production and a lot of other things. So please help me welcome Greg Jarvis with Raspberry Delight from Shoshone, Wyoming.
Working? Okay. Thanks, Cindy. It's nice to be here this morning, and like Cindy said, my name's Greg Jarvis. We started Raspberry Delight Farms in the spring of 1999. We started looking into doing specialty crops and different things in 1988. My wife and I got married in 1976, and we'd started farming and just raising normal crops, small grains, beans, corn. We had some cattle and stuff, but when we got out to the end of the 90s there, the prices for our product were staying about the same, but the inputs were just going up and up, and we were making less and less money, and so we started looking into specialty crops, and I get several different farm publications and stuff, and they had articles on some people done raspberries and vegetables and all different kinds of specialty crops, and I'd compile those all together in a notebook. And so in 1998 we decided we'd do it, and We looked at the different crops, and we picked raspberries because they're a real perishable product. And in Wyoming, you can't hardly get a good raspberry at the store because they're at the end of their shelf life when you get them. So we started checking into everything we could about raspberry production. And of course, there wasn't anything in Wyoming, so we had to start looking at outside in other states. And I've always done a lot on the computer, and we had landline internet, and so I started checking on the internet and spending hours and hours doing searches and stuff. And it was so slow, it took forever, but we got quite a bit of information compiled on raspberries. And if we had some friends there at Riverton that had been experimenting with raspberries for, they'd started in 91 and been pretty successful at it. They'd got a good stand when they planted and everything, and so they thought, well, it is possible to do here. So we knew that labor was going to be an issue with the raspberry, so I started checking on the internet and found out that they made a raspberry picker out in Linden, Washington. And so in the summer of 88 or 98, we traveled out to Washington and spent about a week out there and went to some truck farms and went to some raspberry farms and watched these machines work. And they did an excellent job out there. And so we thought, well, when the raspberries get going, we'll look into buying one of these machines so we can pick the raspberries, and we won't have to depend on labor to come in and pick all of them. So we got that figured out. And it was interesting when we were out there looking at those pickers, there were two guys there from Chile, South America, and they were looking at raspberry pickers, and so we got to pick their brain a little bit. They'd been doing it like 4 or 5 years, and they were looking into a picker. But so I got to talk to them a little bit about production, and their elevation and stuff was about the same where we're at there in Wyoming, about 5,000 feet. So they gave me a lot of tips on fertilization and stuff on raspberries and what they'd found out over the 5 years they'd been raising them. So it was a good trip. So in about December of 98 then, we started checking into nurseries and stuff where we could get the plants, and I found a nursery online. It's back in Arkansas, but actually the raspberries we pick come out of Oregon and Washington through a nursery there, but they sell them out of that nursery in Arkansas. So we ordered 4,400 plants. The picker, they recommended putting the rows on 10-foot centers. So with on 10-foot centers, and then they recommended planting them 2 feet apart. We planted, it took 4,400 to plant 2 acres. And the guy that was selling the pickers said to justify the picker, you needed like 6 acres. So that was kind of our long-range plan for the next 3 or 4 years, was to get up to 6 acres. But we didn't have any market established yet. So we planted the 2 acres in the spring of 99, and we thought, wow, this raspberry growing is really easy. We planted those 4,400 plants, and I don't think we had 10 die in that whole 2 acres. And they were beautiful. And actually, we picked about 25 12.5-pint flats off of that acreage that first year. And so the next year, we went ahead and planted 2 more acres down below those. And it was the start of the drought in the year 2000, and we lost them all. There wasn't 10 survived. And to get them established at that time, it was about $5,000 an acre just for the planting. And then it takes about 3 to 4 years before they come into full production. So, yeah, at that time, the cost was about $5,000 an acre. Now it's more like 10 or 12. Things have gone up so much. But so we started with the raspberries, and that second year, we did have some production, but we didn't have any help yet, and we couldn't afford the picker yet. They were like $50,000 for a pull type. And so we got a hold of high school kids, college kids, and that kind of worked, but it didn't really, because their schedules are so busy anymore that you couldn't get them out there long enough to pick enough to really do anything. So, but it was good. It was good to start out slow like that, because, like I said, we didn't have any market developed, and we wanted to direct market everything. And so we picked those raspberries and loaded them in the pickup and took them over to Lander, Wyoming. The friends of ours that had started the raspberries there out of Riverton, they were selling in Riverton, so we thought, well, we'll just take ours to Lander and we can sell in Lander. And we sat over on the street that first time and put a little sign out there about this big on the street, and everybody, they'd drive by and they'd look, but they didn't know what was going on, because at that point in time, 10 years ago, they weren't accustomed to farmers markets and stuff in stands here in Wyoming, and they just drive by and look. And finally, we got one guy pulled up and stopped and bought some raspberries. And once he stopped, then it's kind of just a chain reaction after that. People see and they're curious, so they want to come see what the other people are looking at. So we did get them sold that day. And it was a slow process. We thought that, you know, we were just going to raise these things and just go right out and sell them all, and that was going to be the easy part. But actually, the marketing's the toughest part, and you just got to stick with it. We thought in 2 years, 2 to 3 years, we'd be established and we could sell everything we raised, but it took about 5 to get the word out. And there's still people all over Wyoming. About half the customers we get every day at the farm now say, we didn't even know you were here until a friend told us last year. Yeah, and it just keeps snowballing now, and it gets bigger and bigger. On an average day, once the raspberries start coming off, we'll have about 25 to 40 cars a day come through on weekdays, and some weekends we've had as high as 200 cars. I mean, there's just people everywhere. And the phone rings off the wall. It's already been ringing off the wall for about, it started 1st of July because they can't remember, especially the people from like the West Coast and stuff that are used to raspberries and stuff. They come off in June and July, so they think they missed them. So they start calling in July, and yeah, we get 40, 50 calls a day some days. We're still doing that. The raspberries are a little bit slow this year. Due to the cool, wet spring and the cool June. They're like about two to three weeks late. We usually start somewhere around the 10th of August. We've been going as early as the 1st of August, but yeah, we had the pickers come in yesterday and they cleaned the whole field off in about 4 hours. So they're there, but they just aren't ripening yet. So we're hoping, by the end of the week here, we'll have raspberries full time. So yeah, we keep getting people calling and stopping, and we don't have any raspberries for them yet. But is there anything else I could tell them, Cindy? Oh, yes. That's the fresh side of our business. And after the berries started coming into full production, we were getting more and more soft berries all the time. When they were younger, we didn't have the soft berries. But after we got into them about 3 years, we had a lot of soft berries. And so in the spring of 2004, well, the fall of 2003, we started talking about maybe doing some gourmet jams and jellies and syrup and that kind of stuff. So we started checking into it and checked with the state food inspector there in our area to see what we would have to do to put it in a commercial kitchen. So in February of 2004, we converted that packing barn that we had there into a commercial kitchen and put in all stainless steel worktops and stainless steel sinks and cook stove and that stuff. And it was about March, I think, we started doing working up the recipes. And originally we worked up four recipes. We did just a regular raspberry jam that was normally sweetened, and then we did one that was with half as much sugar, and we did a honey one, and we also did a Splenda one. We had a good friend that was a diabetic, and she couldn't have the regular jam with sugar, so we did Splenda jam, used the Splenda for a sweetener. And we started with those four products, and we started producing them in July, I think, and we made a little bit of product. Well, it took a while to figure out what we wanted for packaging, and I spent hours and hours on the internet again searching to find the packaging and then find it at a good price. And so we selected the jars and bottles and stuff we wanted to put our product in, and then we started checking in the labels, and I didn't think the labels would be that big a deal. And so we started checking with the commercial printers and stuff, and it was terrible expensive in small lots like that. One label was like 20 to 30 cents from all the companies. We priced them in several places. And so, like I said, I do a lot on the computer anyway, and I like it. So we'll just get our own printer and buy label stock and then print our own. So we started out with, it was like a $20 program. It's a card program, and it'll do labels. Yeah, and I designed all the labels in that, and we just started printing them. First, we started with an Epson printer, and we didn't have that much volume, and so we started with it, and and printed them all in color, and I could do them for about 7 or 8 cents a label on the colored printer. So, yes?
With your value-added products, say your jams, jelly syrups, what is your price per ounce, or does it vary the product line?
No, it's about the same per ounce on every one of the products. Yeah. It's about 75 cents an ounce, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so we started printing the labels, and then you have to get the labels approved. And at that time, Linda Melcher was down at the University of Wyoming, and she had a program that would do nutrition facts labels. You'd give her the recipe, and then the exact amounts that you put in the recipe, and she'd plug that into that program, and then it'd spit out a nutrition facts label. But then I don't know what happened to that program, but it went away, and then Linda went away. And the only option now, I guess, is you have to send samples of your product to Loveland, Colorado,
yeah,
to that test lab.
In
there's one in Nebraska.
But
it's like $600 per label to get it tested
products,
that way.
Do you need the nutrition label? Is that a half?
Well, it's kind of a gray area right there. Yeah. For our kind of operation, you really wouldn't have to.
Because if you go to the grocery store, oftentimes jams and jellies just have,
right. Like I said, we had big plans and big visions. We were thinking we were going to be in Walmart and in all the chain grocery stores. And so that's why we went that route. But I'm kind of glad we did, because people like that on there. So. But I don't know, Cindy. I was going to ask you. I was looking on the internet one day there last fall, and I found it's a $350 program that will do the same thing that Linda Melcher's program did, but it's updated. It's a more sophisticated one.
Yeah, some of the tricky part about that is you have to really understand the ingredients. You can't just say it's peanut butter that's in it. You have to give a little more information, and so getting all of the fine details into the program is really important. But for the nutrition part, you have to list your ingredients, but if you're doing like Greg is, he would not have to list the nutrition necessarily, but he would have to list all of the ingredients in order with the most prevalent ingredient first. Mm-hmm. So there are some strict guidelines for that. The nutritional labeling that Greg has done is sort of an added bonus for cottage producers.
And then there's also a lot of state labeling laws and stuff that you have to follow, like the name of the product has to be the largest thing on the label, and there's certain places on the label where certain things have to go. Yeah, so we got that started and started making jam, and it was real interesting, the marketing part of this too. We were doing the stand over in Lander once a week on Thursdays, and so we debuted all of our jams and stuff over at the stand. And that worked really good, because you could catch the comments and stuff from the people walking up and stuff and buying their raspberries. And that first time we took the product over those four products, the regular jam sold really well, but we called it low sugar raspberry jam. We didn't sell a quarter as much. And actually, people, when they heard the word low sugar, they go, oh, I want the sugar. So we came back, and I was making the labels anyway, and we had one of our friends was cooking at the time with my wife, and we were out in the kitchen there talking about it, and they said, well, let's call it More Fruit Raspberry Jam. So we changed the name to More Fruit. Because it is, there's less sugar, there's more fruit. So we changed the name to More Fruit, took it over the next week, sold just as much as the other. In fact, I think we sold more of the the more fruit than we did. So the marketing, yeah, you just really need to stay attuned to the marketing, listen to the people. And that's kind of how most of our products have came about. We we do 8 jams and a jelly. We have 17 different products now. And those all came from customers asking, well, have you ever had any of this? We'd like to have some of this. And one of our first ones, well, yeah, no, let's see. We did the jams first. Well, we started getting more and more berries, and we still didn't have the market established at home so that the people would come by the farm. And so I still had to travel a lot. And they started a new farmer's market in Laramie, Wyoming, in about 2004, somewhere's around there, 2004. And our daughter and son-in-law and the grandkids lived down there, and so we thought, well, that'd be a good market to try. And we'd gone down even before the farmer's market started and sat on the street down there. And once people figured out who we were and where we were from and that we had good raspberries and stuff, well, we just pull into town, and if they saw the raspberries, they'd just flock in there and buy everything we had. So we kind of had a market foothold there before we started the farmer's market. But we started traveling down to the farmer's market in 04 because we just had so many berries that, we were probably picking 500 to 600 pounds a day, and that's a lot of berries to sell. So we picked that Laramie market, farmer's market, and we went down there, and boy, after about 2 markets there, we couldn't take enough raspberries down there. I mean, we just load the trailer up with everything we could get in it, and in 45 minutes we'd be sold out. It's a 3-hour market. We'd be sold out of the whole thing in an hour, 45 minutes to an hour. They'd come and help us set up our stand and stuff just so they could be the first ones to get to buy raspberries when we started selling at 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock, I guess. And then the ones that didn't get them that week, then, boy, they'd be there before the market started the next week, and they'd be in line. We'd have a line block and a half, 2 blocks long. And so I'd hire a couple college kids to come help us and to haul them out of the trailer and everything. And, yeah, we'd just sell them just as fast as you could pass the money and the berries back and forth. But the jams and stuff, like I said, we on the marketing on those, we listened to what the customers said. And where was I going with this? I was going to tell you about the jams first. Well, we ended up with a pear raspberry jam and a peach raspberry jam. So we started doing some different combinations with raspberry, and people like those too. But the reason we did those, and we have an apple, and then we raised some rhubarb, so we thought, well, rhubarb raspberry would probably go good together because rhubarb and strawberries go good together. And so we came out with the rhubarb raspberry, apple raspberry, peach raspberry, and pear raspberry. And the way I ended up with the fruit, the peaches and the pears, is down at that market in Laramie, I met one of the ladies there that was coming up from Palisade, Colorado every week. She said she'd wholesale me fruit. And we didn't have that much fresh fruit in Fremont County. And so I'd call her on Thursday night, put in a big order, and we'd order 40, 50, 60 cases of whatever she had that week. And when the market was over, we'd load those up and then bring those back to Fremont County and sell them at the farm Monday through Wednesday. And then on Thursday, we'd do the market over in Lander. So we'd take the rest and then finish it off in Lander on Thursday. But sometimes we'd have 3 or 4 cases left. And so, well, what are we going to do with these things? So I had the ladies there, and they were packaging the raspberry. Go ahead and process some of those, and then we started. It was pretty easy to adapt the other fruit into the jam. We just needed to adjust the sugar amounts, is all, from our original recipes. And so we came out with the other fruits, but yes?
I'm curious about your Splenda, your no sugar added products. I've tried to do that commercially, and it's very difficult because it's an unstable product.
Yeah, I know. We don't like the shelf life of it and stuff.
So do you keep it totally under refrigeration?
No, not when we first make it, but boy, once it's opened, it has to be refrigerated. Because we hot water bath everything, so it's canned, so, and it's got a vacuum on it, so. But yeah, and even with the vacuum on it and stuff, in 3 to 4 months it'll start turning dark. Yeah, we don't like the stuff.
1 month is what I tell my clients.
We're kind of backing out of it because, we ended up, we also wholesale our products to little gift shops and stuff around the state, and yeah, we didn't like the shelf life of it, so we could kind of quit pushing it at all. We keep a little bit there in our store at the farm, but yeah, we'd like to do, I've thought about trying the stevia, but actually it's not legal. I don't know. It's not legal to use because it's not an approved. Yeah, so you got to watch that too. Yeah, so we came out with those, and then at the stand in Lander, they kept asking about this raspberry chipotle sauce. So I'd never heard of the stuff. They said, "Oh yeah, it's really good." So this one gal came, and she was working in a restaurant there in Lander, and she was on her break, and so she said, "Just a minute, I'll be back." She ran back down to the restaurant and poured some up in some little cups and brought it back up to us so we could try it. Wow, this stuff's really good. They said they were getting it at Sam's Club in Casper, so we, next time we were in Sam's, we stopped and looked, and sure enough, we found a bottle of it and brought it home and tried it, and it was good, but you got to looking on the label, and raspberries were about fifth or sixth on the list, and there's water and sugar and corn syrup and all of that stuff. So I started messing with that recipe, and that one took forever. It's a complicated recipe. It's got green chilies and jalapenos and chipotle peppers, those smoked chipotle peppers, and boy, trying to get the combination and the salt and the sugar and everything just right, and it was terrible. We did about 6 recipes before we even let anybody try it. And then at about 6, they were getting better all the time. And so we labeled the jars, and now we gave them to friends and family and stuff and let them try them and told them to tell us which one they liked the best. And so we just kind of worked off of that and kept working it up. And I think we started with recipe number 9. Before we marketed any of it. And then we did a couple small changes after that. We're on recipe 11 now, but yeah, some of the flavors and stuff and some of that stuff is real complex, and it just takes a while to get everything adjusted, the amounts, till you get it there. But yeah, so we have it, and then we had the bee man coming in to, he'd bring hives on to the raspberry field there, put them behind the house to pollinate the raspberries. Boy, that really increased our production when we did that. So he had this honey, and so it was really beautiful honey coming off of those raspberries, and so he'd extract that separate and then sell it back to us, wholesale it back to us, and then we'd sell it there with our products and stuff. And whenever we go out of state anywheres in the country, we're always looking in gift shops and stuff to see what's out there and in unique products and stuff. And we got to noticing there was quite a few different flavored honeys and stuff. So we started playing around with honey and putting raspberry juice in it. And that was really tricky to do. Not as easy as you'd think. You got to have the right temperature, and it changes all the time with the bricks of sugar in the honey. some years it's sweeter and some years it's not, and so you have to play with all of that all the time and readjust your recipe. But that's been a real successful product too. So we, and on the marketing on it, we started out as, we called it raspberry flavored honey, and it did okay. It sold pretty good, but we got to thinking about it, and well, what would be a catchy word to make this stuff sound really good? So we came up with raspberry infused honey, and that's what we do. We infuse the raspberry juice into the honey, and so we call it raspberry infused honey now. And yeah, it's really intriguing. People hear that, you know, wow, what's this raspberry infused honey? Yeah, in last fall, we came out with two more products. We're doing a raspberry salsa now and a raspberry barbecue sauce. So we have 17 products. And then in some of the products, we have two sizes in the jams, just a medium and a small, because they don't move as fast. But like our most popular products, we do it was supposed to be 12 ounce, but they only hold 11 ounces, the jar we use. So we have an 11 ounce too. Yeah, so with all the products, there's like 34 labels that we have to do, because each one's different because of the, on the nutrition facts, it has to be the grams that's in a 4 ounce or an 8 ounce or 11 ounce. So they're all different labels. So yeah, we got tons of labels to do. And if you change anything on them, yeah, it takes forever to get everything all changed over. You got to go in the program and tweak every one. So we have two right now. We've got Autumn Bliss is one. We do fall bearing varieties. Well, when we talked to those guys from Chile, they we picked their brains a little bit, and they'd been trying them for that 5 or 6 years and found some varieties they liked, and so we got the names of ones they were using, and they do real well here. But each one's a little bit different, and you kind of have to experiment and try a few, because one variety that'll do good, like down here in Torrington, up there in Riverton area, it won't do good at all. So you just have to kind of play with them a little bit. But we picked the fall bearing varieties because they produce fruit on the primal cane. Raspberry has two canes, the summer bears do. The primal cane comes the first year, and it doesn't produce any fruit. And then the second year, that cane overwinters, and the next year it's called the floral cane, and the floral cane produces the fruit. And then a new primal cane comes for the next year's production. And if those freeze at the wrong time, then it damages the cane and you don't get any fruit production. So with the fall-bearing varieties, we just cut those down to the ground every year because they produce the fruit on the primal cane. And you don't have to worry about any damage from frost or anything, overwintering and stuff. And we found out that if we leave the raspberry bushes there until about the 1st of March, they do a good job of catching snow. And our irrigation water doesn't come in until, oh, April 15th. Now it's really late. And so that kind of gives them one irrigation before we get the water in the ditch. So, yes?
Greg, I'm Leroy Johnson. I've actually talked to you a lot when I was in Nebraska.
Right.
About it. And we were talking about the blackberries. And we did plant some this year. Have you ever gotten into that? I know you're thinking.
No, we've tried blueberries 3 or 4 times. Right. We'd really like to do the blueberries, but man, they're tough. We thought we had it made 2 years ago. We planted about 5 varieties, 2 of each, and some of them did pretty well. Some of them didn't do well at all. So we were kind of getting it figured out which ones maybe we could raise, and they overwintered. And the next spring, the deer came in and ate them off and killed them, and so we haven't tried it again.
So you use Autumn Bliss, and what is your other cultivar?
There's Autumn Bliss, there's Autumn Britain, Tadmor is a Australian variety that's good. Dinkum is another one, a fall bear.
Heritage is another good one.
Yeah. Heritage is an old variety, and in Autumn Bliss and Autumn Britain, and all those are spin-offs of Heritage.
And Carolina Bliss is one of the ones we've planted.
Yeah, and then, our other one is Caroline. But I don't know about the Carolines. I love the berries, and they all have a little bit different flavor. Some of them are sweeter and more perfumey, and some of them are more tart. Some of them keep better than others. But the Carolines, oh my golly, they get like 8 foot tall.
Is there any reason why you all aren't looking at Pathfinder and Trailblazer?
Are they fall bears?
Yeah. They were in Cheyenne.
Were they?
Yes. I guess I have to come this afternoon.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't looked into two of them too much the last 3 or 4 years.
How many acres do you have now?
2 acres that are, those 2 acres we planted in 99 that are well established. And in fact, we're starting to see a little bit of die out in some of the rows. They said 12 to 15 years of production on them, and that's about it. So we started planting this new acreage behind the house, and can't get the darn things to grow. With the drought and stuff, we've had a real dry spring. And yeah, we planted them like we did in 99, and better than 2000, we could get about half of them to live. So we did it 3 years in a row. Half of them would live, so we'd buy enough to go in and sweeten it up in between where they'd all died. And then half of those would live, so we were down to like a three-quarter stand. And they're still kind of skippy in spots.
Do you use T-tape or drip?
We converted to drip irrigation.
That's what we went with.
2 years ago, I put in that wasn't cheap either. I put in a drip station that's got a filtering system that automatically back flushes itself and everything. It's capable of handling about 20 acres as filter is. It's a little overkill for 3 acres of raspberries, but someday we'd like to get into some more vegetable production and stuff, and it works really slick on that. We saw that out in Idaho. Wow, that's sweet. But anyway, it automatically back flushes itself. It's got a computer, and you just program it all in there, and it automatically turns it on, shuts it off every day, and takes care of the whole thing. You just walk up and leave it. It's been pretty nice. And it gets the water right where you need it. We used to flood, and then we'd have mud in the rows, so when the U-Pick people came and our pickers were out there, you're walking through the mud for a day or two after we irrigated. And with the drip, it's dry between the rows, and then we don't have the weeds and stuff either.
What kind of pests do you
have? Well, I don't know. We had this really weird worm there in the first part of July. Well, we noticed when we'd go in the back door of the house, there were two rows right in line with the back door there. They started looking all dry, dusty, and they were shorter than the rest. We'd been busy farming and putting up hay and stuff, and one day I went out there, and there's these long yellow worms that were about this long and just a little smaller than a pencil. They're kind of like an inchworm. They crawl along like this on the canes. Yeah, what in the world is this stuff? And they were bright yellow, and they had two little rows of dots down each side of their back. There'd be two dots, and then a skip space and two dots, and they're just perfectly spaced down their back on both sides. So I took a picture of them and got a hold of Lars Baker, weed and pest director there in Fremont County, and he sent it off to the University of Wyoming to someone, and they looked, and it was some kind of current. I can't remember the second part of the word, but it's a worm that
Softlock?
No.
Current Core?
No, it was Current. It had a weird name. Worm. But anyway, yeah, they attack currant bushes. And for some unknown reason, they attacked two rows of our raspberries. They about destroyed them. I don't know that we're going to get any production out of those two rows this year or not. But they just attacked those two rows. I mean, the row on either side of those two rows, there wasn't one of those worms in there. They were just on those two rows. And then now we've had some kind of, it's almost a microscopic little worm. I never have sent any in to UW to see what they were, but they, you can't, they're almost translucent. They're a little green thing, and they're just, oh, like quarter inch long at the longest. And they'll get on the bushes on the stubble in the spring when the new shoots are trying to come out. And boy, they just keep them chewed off and they won't start. And it'll just be patches out in the field there where it's kind of green, but where they aren't, it's nice and green. So,
how do you control those?
Seven. Yeah, we just go out with the sprayer and just spray some seven on the rows. And yeah, and they'll green up like in 2 or 3 days after we do that. So we've had to do that a few times, and it's different every year. Sometimes we can get by 2 or 3 years and not have any pests, and then we'll have a year where we get all kinds of different stuff. We've had a lot of grasshoppers the last couple of years. But they don't seem to do a lot of damage. I don't know, they're damaging some of the berries this year. And once you're into production, there isn't basically anything you can do. You can't spray the raspberry. I mean, they're just like a sponge. They soak up everything you put on them. So, yeah, once you get to fruit production, you just got to take what you get. So, is there anything else that you can think of?
On your commercial kitchen, how much what was the cost of that?
Well, I did all the work myself, and I got a really good deal on a commercial sink. It was a brand new sink I found down in Salt Lake. Our son had an eye injury when he was a baby, and we spent lots of time in Salt Lake there for several years, and there's a big restaurant supply place there, and I stopped there one day, and I'd been pricing sinks, and these sinks were like $1,800. I wanted one that was 2 foot by 2 foot by 2 feet deep, and they're expensive. Yeah, they were like $1,800 just for the sink. We stopped at that restaurant supply that one day, just kind of checking out prices and stuff for this commercial kitchen, and he told me he had one and sell it to me for $600, and I go, what's wrong with it? And he says, nothing. And I went out and looked, and yeah, there wasn't. I said, are you sure that's right? He said, that's what it says in the book. We'll sell it to you for $600. Sold. Yeah, so we got the thing out of there, or changed his mind. But we ended up, we put that kitchen together. I did all the work and stuff, but all we've got, five stainless steel tables, and then another stainless steel worktop that I got from a friend that he stole from an auction and over in Lander. He gave $5 for the thing, and it's been a really handy piece of equipment. I like it better than our tables because it's lower, and to pour a product and stuff, the ladies have to pour it into the bottles and jars and stuff, and it's low enough, it works really good for that. But we ended up with about 5,000 in the commercial kitchen, and I'm guessing that was in 2004, so it's probably at least double that now, even if you did all the work.
Do you do internet sales?
Yes. Yeah, here, not too long after we started the jams, like in 05, I think the next year, we started doing a website. Well, we started accepting, we didn't want to, we started accepting credit cards, and that'll be a hassle. But now credit card sales account for about half of our sales. If you don't have a credit card machine, and they'll buy more. Yeah, because they don't have the cash, but they'll put it on their card.
Do
Yeah, and so through the credit card company, they had an option where you could do a website through them at a discounted price. And so we started that website, and actually it's one of those build your own websites. And we just started out with, they gave me a starter page to kind of get me started, and I can go in and change anything on it. It's like 12 or 14 pages now, I don't know, I've lost track. But so you can put all kinds of different information on there. And we've had the shopping cart for 2 years, but I haven't turned it on. We don't know whether we can keep up with the production. Yeah, we kind of get it handled, and then how some of our help moves away. I like to have about 3 ladies on tap all the time to do the cooking, and now we're down to 0. And so, yeah, we just get to about the point of, well, we can handle this and turn the shopping cart on and start taking orders off the internet, and then we'll lose the cook, and then, oh, I don't think we better. We won't be able to keep up with our, because we have, oh, about 20 little retail stores around the state that we wholesale to and stuff, and you can't ever figure those out. It isn't the set deal. I mean, they'll go along and they don't hardly order anything, then boom, then they order 10 cases of stuff. And you're going, wow, now we're out of stock. So, but yeah, the website's been good too, and I try to keep it up. I haven't been as good about it this spring. We were so busy.
So I didn't get that data. But
yeah, so we take phone orders and email orders. We check the email every day too. So, and I brought a few catalogs. We didn't have a lot left. I should have printed off some more, but
I'll send a few down each room.
Okay.
Have you gotten in, I can't remember our conversations, have you gotten into the ice creams and stuff that in your store there?
No. Once you get the people coming to the farm, I mean, you can do anything. Mm-hmm. You can sell them anything. We've experimented with vegetables, and I like raising vegetables, but it's just a lot of extra work on top of the raspberries. When we get into full production, I have 8 to 12 pickers out in the field, and for every picker, 2 pickers in the field, it takes 1 lady in the barn packaging. So we'll have as high as 14, 16 people working a day there for 8 to 10 weeks. And I mean, it's just, it's crazy. And then all the customers coming by and stuff. But yeah, once you get the people coming, oh, I've tried different vegetables and stuff. Oh, 1 year I had a friend there in Shoshone that has a greenhouse, and he had a whole bunch of extra tomatoes and cucumbers, and then he planted some squash for me and started them there in the greenhouse. We put in 900 tomato plants, 600 cucumbers, and about 600 squash plants. And we put those all under drip, under that plastic mulch. The friend that started the raspberries over by Riverton, he bought this mulcher because he wanted to do watermelon, cantaloupe, do a bunch of melons. And so he got this mulcher, and he told me I could use it. So I went over and borrowed that thing, and then he has a transplanter that'll plant those peat pot plants. And so we planted them with that planter. It only took a couple hours to plant all of those out of the greenhouse. But yeah, and then we put it all under drip, and so there were no weeds or anything because of the plastic mulch. It worked fantastic, but we were just so busy with the other. And then that year, the tomatoes wouldn't ripen very good, and they just, well, I didn't have time to send the labor through. They should be, all those suckers should be pruned off and part of the blossoms and stuff so you can get the fruit to set. I didn't have time to send the labor through there, and we got a real light frost one morning. It was perfect. It just kind of knocked the tops off those tomatoes, and boy, they started ripening, and they were getting beautiful, and we got about a week out of them, and they had a freeze. Finished them off. That was kind of thick. There was a quarter of a mile row there of red just down through there, tomatoes. We lost all of them. But yeah, But any kind of that stuff, once you get going, you can sell any of that kind of stuff. And oh, you could do all kinds of fun things. I mean, you could set up a little cafe there, and you could serve ice cream, you know, put up a barn, or if you've got an old barn, go in there and fix some rooms up and stuff in there, and you can sell ice cream, drinks. And once you get the people there that, well, they come out to pick raspberries and they're hot, you know, and if a guy had some kind of drinks and stuff, yeah, you could sell those like hotcakes. And we've had people calling all from around the state and surrounding states, wonder if we did camping picks. I go, what's a camping pick? And they said, well, have you got a campground so we can bring our campers and come and stay and then pick raspberries? Yeah, so you get into RV park and everything else. Yeah, the possibilities are endless. Yes, at Table Mountain Vineyards. Well, yeah, when we got to a certain point, we had so many raspberries that we couldn't make them all into jam either. And so the extra soft ones, we bucketed those up, and we got a hold of Patrick and his dad and at Table Mountain Vineyards and said, would you be interested in some raspberries and make some raspberry wine? He said, yeah, we'd like to try it. So we saved them a bunch, and they came up and picked them up, and yeah, and so they make two raspberry wines now, and they use our raspberries or pile stuff to make the raspberry wine. But yeah, that's another possibility. You could, with a fruit like that, yeah, you could get into winemaking too if you wanted to.
Do you freeze any?
We freeze about 3,500 pounds for our youth, and then we also sell frozen ones in a 24-ounce tub, and we sell those year-round too. But we freeze about, at this point, we're freezing about 3,500 pounds for our use, and then we put up about 1,000 quarts of juice, because the syrup and some of our products use the juice instead of the berry. So, yes?
Have you ever tried transplanting from your established bed to new bed?
Yeah, they don't like to live.
See, and I went on the internet, and according to the internet, all you gotta do is just dig them up and stick them in another hole, and they grow.
It doesn't always
work. Yeah, we've had friends and stuff come by and I let them dig up a few. Actually, you're not supposed to. They're patented varieties, and they didn't make us sign an agreement or anything, but those patented varieties, you aren't supposed to sell any of the plants. But we've had friends take 10, 15 of them, take them home and try them. They might get one to live sometimes. Yeah. Yeah, so we just buy the bare root stock. And they need lots of water that first year. After that, they like water, but they like to dry out too. They shouldn't be in a wet spot, or they don't need to get. Yes? Below 90 degrees, we irrigate every 7 days when we used to do the flood, and above 90 degrees, every 5 days. But we're real sandy. I mean, it's just like beach sand in Hidden Valley where we're farming there.
That's early in the spring we have to start?
Well, we usually start, try to get the water on them. It comes in between the 15th and 20th of April, so sometime between mid-April and 1st of May.
With your drip system then, Greg, how often are you running?
Drip system, well, I don't know, that was a big experiment too. We started out, that first year we didn't irrigate them quite enough. We were only doing like, on the main patch there, we were doing about 7 hours a day, I think. Now we're up to about 15. Especially when you get closer to fruit production, man, when the fruit's coming on, it takes lots of water.
How deep is the root system?
About a foot. Uh-huh. Yeah, they grow in the top foot of soil, so they're real shallow rooted. They're rhizominous, so they creep around. That's the toughest part, is keeping them under control.
Do you
Yeah, if you just let them go, I mean, it'd just be a bramble patch. It is solid. So we keep them trained in those 10-foot rows, about a 2-2.5-foot hedgerow, 10 feet apart.
Do you tell us?
You had a question?
On 2 acres, what is your actual berry production?
Berry production, it varies a little bit. Oh, between 25 and 35,000 pounds.
And then what is your annual case production on your value added?
We've been doing, it kind of varies a little bit every year. It kind of stabilized. Boy, it just grew like crazy for a while. And last year, I think we did about 60,000 bottles. So that'd be, what, 500 cases? There's 12 in a case. That ends up being a big project.
And just from a few ideas. Labor intensive.
Yes, it is.
About 3 ladies for, you know, in the kitchen.
Yeah, 1 lady for each, 2 out in the field. So that usually runs between 12 to 14 a day for those
two and a half months.
Mm-hmm. But then, I didn't tell you about the. So we got to doing these jams and stuff. And towards the end of raspberry season, we ran out of boxes for the flats, for the raspberries. And so I called this lady up to see if they had any more boxes. And she said, I don't know whether we have any left right now or not. She said, we have these, they're working on high-end gift boxes. I go, what do you mean? She said, well, we have these real high-end pretty gift boxes that we make for customers. And they use them for gift boxes to put product in to sell for Christmas and stuff. So I said, well, send me a catalog. She emailed me one and then sent me one. And they've got these real pretty boxes. And so we started doing, putting these gift boxes together with our product. And now, I don't know, we probably sell over 1,000 boxes a year, and we ship them all over the United States and Europe. Yeah, we ship everywhere, but yeah, and so we just take orders over the phone, and they call and tell us what they'd like in the box. We custom make all the boxes. We've worked on a few to do in the retail stores. It's just a set price box. This is what you get, but there at the farm in our store, we custom make the boxes, and we can make gift boxes from $15 to $50.
All from how many acres again?
2. Yeah, you just can't believe, you know, you're thinking farming, you know, we used to farm like 2,000 acres. And then, actually in 2000, I had a heart attack and I'd done most of the calving and stuff. We had a 500, we had cow-calf operation between my brother and dad and I. And I calved all the 2-year-olds at my house and stuff. And, after I had the heart attack, I didn't want to do it anymore, and nobody else wanted to do it. And so we sold the cows in July of 2001. But after we sold the cows and everything, these raspberries started coming on and stuff. And actually, we can produce more income with 2 acres of raspberries than we did that. And I also had another farm leased. It was about 120 acres. We produced more income on this 2 acres than we did with 180 cows and another 120 acre farm. And it's a lot more fun, especially in February when we were calving. Yeah, I converted our packing barn and commercial kitchens in my calving facility. We gutted it and turned it into a commercial kitchen and stuff where I used to pull the calves. And it's a lot nicer going in there and turning on the cook stove and making a batch of jam than it was out there pulling calves when it was 30 below zero. Any other questions?
Do you have problems with birds? Do you have putting anything?
We've had quite a few birds, but they're in Hidden Valley. Well, we live on the top end of Boyson Reservoir there, and there's lots of hawks. And those hawks just cruise that 2-acre raspberry field there in front of the house all the time. And yeah, those little birds are deathly afraid of hawks. So we don't seem to have much damage. Once in a while, the berries out on the very top. If you've ever seen raspberries, the cane, once it gets heavy with fruit, kind of hangs over and the leaves are hanging off kind of the top and the berries hang underneath the branch. So they're kind of hidden. They're hard to get to. So we haven't had a whole lot of problems with birds. I know out there in Washington they had quite a few problems with birds, especially in the blueberries. They had all kinds of electronic scarecrow things and all kinds of stuff to try to keep the birds out of there. Any other questions?
Greg is going to be here through lunch at least, maybe a little longer. So if you think of something you want to visit further, please do so. Help me thank Greg for his time and the benefit of his experience this afternoon. We have a gift for you. It's the Code of the West. It's a video that was produced about cowboy ethics and the Western lifestyle. So thanks again, Greg, for coming to this week.